When you think of music made in Detroit, you certainly think of Motown. Then there's R&B, gospel, jazz, rock, rap, and there is country.
Sweetheart, I'm tired of roaming and I want to settle down. I'm tired of gallivanting and painting up the town.
The Motor City has a rich, rich history of country and western and bluegrass musicians and clubs, showrooms, and radio stations that really got that music out to an eager public. My next guest tells their story in his new book, Detroit Country Music, Mountaineers, Cowboys, and Rockabillies. Craig Mackey, good to have you with us on Stateside.
Very good to be here. Thank you so much.
So the Grand Ole Opry, kind of what everybody thinks of as that old-timey country music, there were a lot of folks who practiced that kind of music, weren't they, who came to Detroit?
Absolutely. And the Opry represented some of the most famous practitioners of country music, so whatever was going on down there was going on up here in Detroit. Investigating it, I sort of ran into some record collectors who had some music that was made in Detroit, and I had no idea. And I started tracking down some of these fellows, and turned out they had some fascinating stories about their careers in music in Detroit and how Detroit was back in the 1940s and 50s that sort of created an environment that made it favorable for them to practice their music in Detroit.
So what was it that was such a fertile atmosphere in Detroit that made that all possible?
Well, it was mainly the industry that grew up in Detroit and southeastern Michigan during the early 20th century. And so many people from the South came up here, not only at the invitation of the automakers or industrialists, but also family members would call, you know, their cousins or their in-laws to come up and join them. So through the early to mid-20th century, there was a pretty good migration, pretty massive migration. And people came from all over the place. There were people from Oklahoma, Missouri, Arkansas, Tennessee, Alabama, Georgia, especially the Appalachian states, what we think of West Virginia, Virginia, and Kentucky.
And I would guess that those folks coming from such a broad area brought a lot of different types of what we might call country music, but there were many subsets, yes?
Yes, absolutely. There were people who actually grew up out west in a cowboy environment that sort of represented the end of the 19th century cowboy experience, who came to Detroit. And I was thinking of Chief Redbird.
Mm-hmm. Chief Redbird being one of the artists you profile in the book.
Yes. And there were people from Appalachia who were sort of before Bill Monroe's generation, Bill Monroe, the king of bluegrass, and brought their bluegrass music with them. And it's still going pretty strong in southeast Michigan.
And it seems very clear from your book, Detroit Country Music, Craig, that there were no shortage of radio stations that would have artists on regularly. Doesn't happen today, but it did then. Or showrooms for them to play at. And so it was something where they actually had a way of getting their music out there besides sitting in their living rooms and playing.
Right, absolutely. One fellow I know of came up during the 20s and hired into a Ford factory in Highland Park. And he mainly did house parties, and then he would play cafes once in a while. But then by the late 30s, there was such a demand that nightclubs started and bars started having live music in their rooms.
You also spend quite a bit of time in your book, Detroit Country Music, telling us about Casey Clark and the Lazy Ranch Boys, which the name is just delightful, I have to say.
Yeah, the biggest fiddler in show business. Casey Clark was probably the most popular band leader in Detroit during the 50s. He was on clear channel stations, radio stations. He was on television. He had several disc jockey shows on WJR and as well as WEXL in Royal Oak. And he put on a weekly barn dance in a union hall right near the Chrysler facilities. It was a runaway success for many years up until the recession of 57, 58. And
it had to be right where his people were, right by that Chrysler plant.
Right. And it also was right near a community of people from the South living in Detroit. So it was a very big weekly event that many, many people remember to this day.
Long gone, lost John from Bowling Green.
I'm speaking with author Craig Mackey about his book, Detroit Country, Mountaineers, Cowboys, and Rockabillies. And let's talk about a few of the many, many artists you profile in your book. And as we do it, we're going to take a listen to their music. We're going to start with the York brothers, George and Leslie York. What made them so special?
They were very popular. Part of it had to do with their personalities. Part of it had to do with their skill as musicians. And they cut a record for a jukebox company in 1939 called Hamtramck Mama. And the flip side was a song called Going Home, which also was something that people from the South could identify with.
Sure.
Talk about your truckin' mama, boys, I've got one. She's a Hamtramck baby and she has her fun. She's a Hamtramck mama and she sure does know her stuff. She's the hottest thing in town. Lordy, how she can love.
The Hamtramck Mama proved to be an overnight sensation, so to speak, and it was played in jukeboxes throughout the city, spread to parts of Indiana and Ohio.
And the mayor of Hamtramck did not like it one bit, did he?
No, he didn't. And he tried to get a judge to ban it from the city, and I guess that succeeded in making it more popular.
Well, in fact, that song lived on because as a kid growing up in the 60s, I remember hearing Dick Purton on the old Keener 13 playing that in the mid, I'm going to say around 65. He hauled this funny old song out, and he used to play Hamtramck Mama quite a bit, so it had some legs, didn't it?
Yeah, but I was doing some research in Billboard magazine, and as early as 42, Billboard was reporting on the York Brothers' activities in Detroit, so
They were worth tracking, and they did bounce it back and forth. They did. They were Grand Ole Opry, and then one of them kind of drank himself out of a gig at the Grand Ole Opry, didn't he?
Yeah. It was an unfortunate thing, but fortunate for Detroiters because they came back and spent some time here. In fact, they cut their biggest record while living in Detroit. It was called Tennessee Tango for King Records, but they had an interesting career here because even after they moved to Dallas in '53. They would return during the summers.
So they kept coming back to Detroit. Well, let me ask you this. In your preface, you mentioned Detroit country and rockabilly musician Eddie Jackson. Jackson was the front man for a group called the Swingsters. He's really been a major figure in the Detroit country music scene since the 1940s. I'm curious, what was it that made you want to write this book about Detroit country artists like him and the others?
Well, I think part of the reason was just meeting them and their families and learning about their stories. When I met Eddie Jackson, he kind of took a shine to me, and I would hang out at his house whenever I could. He'd have people over, fellow friends who were musicians, and they'd all just jam, and that's how I started to learn how to play guitar from learning from these fellas. So,
well, the book is called Detroit Country Music, Mountaineers, Cowboys, and Rockabillies, written by my guest, Craig Mackey. Thank you so much, Craig. It was really fun talking with you.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure.